This is the Marketing Development Podcast, brought to you by the Marketing Development Academy, the online community designed to help you develop your marketing business, skills, and career by exploring the world of marketing and entrepreneurship. Here is your host, Pete Everett.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast, where I speak with Chris Sanderson from Limber.Works. Limber is a platform that helps agency owners or solopreneurs or freelancers, basically people that can call themselves slashies, and we talk about what that is, sort out their finances and earn equity in a far bigger company. It's a really interesting discussion. Chris used to be a lawyer, and we talk about his journey and what Limber now does and how it could potentially help you in your business. Let's dive straight in. Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. And today I'm delighted to be joined by, he's a bloke called Chris Sanderson. And I was going to say a friend of mine, but I suppose we've only really spoken once, but you're sort of a mutual connection of somebody that we both mutually know. I've said mutual twice now, which is a bit weird. But anyway, Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Pete. We can say friends. I think we can say friends. It's okay.
That's great. That's brilliant. So Chris and I have connected previously. Chris, do you want to give a quick intro as to who you are and what you do? Because this is honestly the weirdest introduction to anybody I've ever done.
Thank you. So I'm Chris Sanderson. If you want to give me a grandiose title, we'll go CEO. But otherwise, founder of an app called Limber. Limber is a invoicing, tax, and pension tool for freelancers and solopreneurs and gig workers and slashies. And I guess my story is I'm an ex-lawyer, which is a slightly strange route to entrepreneurship. Don't think it happens that often. And I did about 6 years at the city. And they decided to jump off the conveyor belt, and here we are.
That's cool. So that was something I was going to pick up on, actually, if you hadn't mentioned it, was you are a genuine bona fide, fully qualified lawyer, aren't you?
A real lawyer, yeah.
A real lawyer. Like, well, I don't know whether you've heard the saying, you know, you keep your friends close and your lawyers closer.
We get a bad rep, but no, I was. I was a technology and IP specialist for a few years. And then I moved in-house to what was then Betfair, then became Paddy Power Betfair, and has now become Flutter, I think. There's some kind of super group of gambling companies.
Right,
yeah. So I was there for 2 years before the light bulb moment.
So, this was obviously then the move out of that kind of lifestyle was obviously something that you'd been thinking about for a significant amount of time. So what was it that then sort of brought you to the light bulb moment, as you put it?
Yeah, so I think it's quite a personal thing. Typically you get entrepreneurs, you discover a pain point and decide to solve it. My pain point was quite personal. It was a general malaise and indifference to working life, I think, which I suspect a lot of people will relate to. I was kind of living for the after work drinks to break up the hour and 15 commute from Dulwich to Hammersmith or whatever. I found being involved in one part of one company in one office quite claustrophobic. Mm-hmm. I found being a lawyer quite narrow. I stumbled into it, as lots of people do, following an English Lit degree, where you kind of wonder where you need to take it. You get the qualification, you get the job, and you don't really think twice when you're 22, 23. Mm-hmm. But then you realize you're on a fairly long conveyor belt, which will get, like any funnel, narrower and narrower, and more and more restrictive the longer you go down it. So, for me, I just felt that I needed to give more of myself and use more of my skills and personality traits. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that the business I started was directed at helping people who wanted a more empowering, more varied, more free work life. And I guess that's why I started Limber. as a tool for those people. Our first product was actually quite different, and I think we'll probably talk about pivoting a bit later on, but our first product was aimed at helping people in the hospitality industry earn with freedom and variety and flexibility. So you'd be a chef or chef/barista, and we'd help you manage your flexible, varied lifestyle on our app. But we always wanted to branch out into other sectors, and we've finally done that with, I guess, our second iteration of the product, which is a much more heavy-hitting invoicing and pension tool for people who have to manage their own payroll, admin, and finances.
Yeah, so, I mean, you raise another good point there, which is when you started on this this journey and decided that you wanted to set up your own business, you wanted to move away, you did have a defined scope in one sense. If I was talking to an American sort of person on this call, we'd talk a lot about niching or niching. And actually what you did with your first product was, whilst it wasn't sort of all encompassing, it was sort of quite fixed on what the target was, and from that you got to learn quite a lot, which then informed the second iteration. So you having come out of your law thing, you weren't necessarily looking for the one big thing. You tried something first to see if it had some traction. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, I think you have to do both. I mean, I'm no expert at this, right? But I think you have to have half an eye on the big, but your execution has to be narrow.
Yeah.
So there's no, in my opinion, there's no point building a business that gives white dogs under 5 kilograms a product, but could never apply to any other user.
Yeah.
Because then you've just got a tiny target market. And if you're looking to scale and grow something significant, that isn't going to happen. But at the same time, you can't go and try and serve every single user on the planet, because then you don't speak to anyone and you can't relate to any of them. So for me, it was a hold on, there must be millions of people out there who feel like I feel, albeit you can solve it in lots of different ways. I believe there is going to be a shift towards way more flexible, varied, and liquid ways of working. And I don't really get, by the way, why employment contracts and notice period exist. Put it this way, if you're building an employment model from scratch in 2019, you would not build what we have now. So I felt there's a shift happening and something significant, a significant movement to be part of. But had we started on day one to try and serve that many people, we would have failed given our resources. And given what we knew about starting a tech product, which was, for me, not very much. So it is really important to start narrow, but I think it's also important that you have a significant market out there, because otherwise you're going to have problems later down the line. You're going to hit a ceiling.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Now, I do know from the sort of pre-chat that we had before this call that you're still refining some of your messaging and your content and your positioning, even with this second iteration of Limber. So you're still, this is still very much a work in progress for you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we'll ever stop doing that, by the way. It's just that the gains will become more and more marginal. Mm-hmm. We typically build small, ship often, iterate quickly as we can.
Yep.
We try not to get too caught up in the details. And we try and make sure we get something broadly in line with what we want out there, and worry about how to refine later. Like anything, the thing you're excited about explaining to your users is just totally irrelevant to them at the start of their journey, but might be way more relevant later. Mm-hmm. The thing you think is a silver bullet and the most exciting thing about your product, your users may not care about. And ultimately, that is the only opinion that matters. So you can sit in a dark room for as much time as you like and argue over how you should explain your product, but ultimately your users can tell you pretty quickly. And that's the most valuable feedback you'll get once it's out there.
I completely agree with that. We when we're talking to clients about SEO, and you know, particular clients in particular industries get hung up on, you know, technicalities and particular terminology and this, that, and the other. And we just have this ridiculous example that, you know, you may sell tables, but if your target audience calls it a panda, you need to rank for panda. And it's that, you know, I come from a development background, and, you know, I can talk and get all completely geek out on development methods and new functionality and, you know, different ways of doing things, and people just don't care. They want to know when they come to us is that we're going to build them something that works, essentially. Mm-hmm. They don't care how it works, it just needs to work. So yeah, you need to I completely agree that you know your own sort of emphasis on what you think is the cool bit is probably irrelevant, to be
perfect. It's so hard though, it's so hard, especially early on, right? So I'm getting more kind of scarred and battle hardy as we kind of carry on. So I'm kind of learning these things. But when you're really pumped about something, you're more likely to think about user feedback in a kind of irritable, kind of annoyed way.
Yeah.
You're like, well, what do you know? I think this is gonna, yeah, I think this is important, but it just doesn't matter. And if you, it's about kind of an attitude. If you have the attitude that the reason you're building a business is so that you can be proven right, then you're going to fail quite quickly. If you've got an attitude that says the reason you're building a business is to help your users, and you've defined who those users are, then your only job is to listen to them and yep. to do what they want you to do within reason. And we might come on to a bit of that later. But I think it takes a certain attitude shift to arrive at that fairly humble moment where you realize your opinion doesn't really matter. You might get to decide what V1 is. You definitely don't get to decide what V1.1 is.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. So do you want to sort of take us on that sort of shift then as you pivoted Limba from the hospitality thing to serving a sort of wider audience of these, you know, youpreneurs slashies. I'm going to ask you what a slashie is in a minute. But you know, these sort of second group of people, what was kind of the realization in that? What was the sort of process that you went through internally? I take it by this point, it wasn't just you, that you do have a small team around you as well.
Yeah. So we've raised about, 500,000 of seed funding so far. So we've got a team around us, which is great. And we're just able to do everything faster and better. So it was interesting. We thought it was Limba V1 was all about, the businesses. It was all about creating a place where a marketplace where there'd be lots of flexible work on it. And we thought we'd start in hospitality because it's a sector I knew well. And then we'd branch out into other things. And then we hit a bit of a ceiling. And this is the point around serving a niche, but keeping an eye on the bigger thing, mm-hmm. where we found actually that if you have to go around selling and building relationships with businesses and essentially in some cases, especially with hospitality, educating the market that, actually the best people might not be available on the fixed contract. They might actually be available in a slightly more employee or person friendly way. Mm-hmm. And if you have to go and do that, your rate of scale, one, is slow, and two, you're going to have to add to your platform kind of vertical by vertical, as if geographical growth isn't difficult enough.
Yep.
With a kind of hyper local marketplace. So we came to the realization mostly because we sat down with a few VCs who took the time to explain why they loved what we were doing, but why they hated how we'd done it. And decided that actually we just got in our own way too much. Mm-hmm. We'd probably done the hard graft for a bit too long, and we hadn't been harsh with ourselves in kind of, I guess, establishing how we would scale that and repeat that growth, because what you do in your first year, you just can't repeat. Because you have to do lots of very kind of manual hacky things to get it off the ground, but you can't do that in every city and every vertical. So we just realized we got in our own way. We wanted to expand into any type of work and be a place for any type of, as I say, freelancer, solopreneur, whatever you want to call them, to work in whatever way they wanted. And we couldn't do that by focusing on the business. Mm-hmm. So we turned it on its head, decided to champion the individual, and decided to completely rewire the way the product works. And as I say, we spent kind of 2 or 3 months building that, and we've now kind of pivoted and relaunched. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
It is really cool. And I've spent since our first chat, I've spent some time looking through your website, which is limber.work for anybody that wants to go and check it out. There will be a link to that in the show notes, so you can just go and tap on it from there. The sort of model that you started talking about, i.e. seeking some seed funding, building a team, having an idea that, you know, to serve a particular demographic which could then grow, that all makes perfect sense. As you then started to pivot away from that, was there ever any concern about what that was going to do to your funding? Did you have to go back to your funders and explain to them the change in direction and what that was for and sort of re-justify yourself? Or were they just in a place where they were happy to say, hey, just go get on with it?
Yeah, we've got a pretty good understanding group of investors. We did have to explain what we were doing. Obviously, transparency is really important. It's really important you take your shareholders along with you. Mm. The vast majority of experienced investors would expect a pivot or two and even hope for one as you refine and understand your business model. But yep. We went back to them and said, look, there's a really grand plan. It's a much bigger prize. It's going to take a bit of work, but we're not convinced with our first hypothesis is the right path. So here's the revised one, and they were cool with it. The one interesting thing was looking after our current users, because there's a lot of people who earn a lot of money through our first version of the product, and we had to decide whether to split the products and build something new or whether to combine them. And we decided to combine them, and obviously you will alienate a few people doing that, but they do work in parallel, so you can still pick up hospitality shifts on the platform. It's just you access it in a slightly different way. And there is overlap in our user base, so that's worked out okay, but it's certainly not a perfect solution.
Okay, cool. So, in fact, the bit of the page that I've just got open in front of me does say, I'm looking for our hospitality product, ? And then you've got a sign up and login thing there.
Correct.
So, yeah, that's probably not a great thing to say on a podcast because nobody else can see my screen. But hey. Now, the thing that really interests me, actually, for the next thing I wanted to talk about is, you've then sort of taken this to the next level. So you've also mentioned your shareholders, but actually you've built a model whereby anybody that uses your system actually starts to become a shareholder in their own right, and they earn equity in the platform. So, I mean, that's kind of an ingenious idea, and some people listening to this might think, hang on, you've done what? That's a bit weird. But do you just want to run us through how that works and the reasons why you've done that? Because that was something that, after we spoke last time, really kind of gripped me. And I, you know, it was one of those moments you sit back in your chair and you think, oh, I wish I'd thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is people do sit up and go, what have you just done? And I don't see it like that. I totally don't see it like that. But look, we recognize that when you decide to go out on your own in a service business, and that's what any of our users are, it's a service business, you could work very, very hard and be very, very successful, be very, very talented, and do it for 10 or 15 years. And you might have an amazing lifestyle and you might really enjoy life, and that's fantastic, and you'll earn good money. But when you get to the end of it, unless you've gone and built an agency or a business or something that involves moving away from what you love doing and actually managing people, which a lot of people don't want to do, you have probably nothing to sell at that point. Mm-hmm. And we felt that was wrong. We felt that society generally didn't do a great job of supporting or legitimizing an alternative way of working, mm-hmm. Be it freelancing or gigging or whatever label you want to put on it. And so we thought it was, I mean, not even important, just like obvious that if you earn using our platform, then we've got an opportunity to combine the power of that global community into Limber and for everyone to own a share in that. So that the bigger it gets, the more you earn, and the more everyone else around you earns, the more valuable your shareholding. So just to explain to your listeners, the way it works is you send invoices on Limber, you get paid in a normal way, we deal with your payroll and pension, so you don't have to bother. And then every time you send an invoice and have it paid, you earn points. Points add up to equity, and on every fundraising round, all we do is we convert your points into cash and then straight back into equity. So if the users of Limber are the most important thing on it, which they are, and if the users of Limber are responsible for growing their own little business, again, which they are, then I mean, it was a no-brainer as far as I was concerned. And it's absolutely the right thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, what you've actually done with that is taken the problem that your users have and literally put it on steroids. Put the solution on steroids. So you've even without the equity thing, Limber is still a platform that would keep people's pensions and their payroll in order, and that could just be the end of the story.
Yeah.
But you've then gone the next level in understanding your audience to say that, look, the reason these people are here is because they've got a business mind and they want to be part of a bigger thing, but that bigger thing doesn't want to include managing people. It doesn't want to include this, that, and the other. Frankly, it's just the fact that they want to earn money to support a lifestyle that they want.
Yeah.
And you've then taken, and that was the moment when I just sat back in my chair and I thought, yeah, that's clever. That's really clever.
One of the things we've had feedback on, actually, and this is something I alluded to earlier, was about 70-80% of the people really love it, but there are about 20% of people who are like, oh, can I just have the cash? which is interesting. And at the moment, the short answer to that is no, but we'll see.
I guess you are going to have to, or you must have an sort of equity release scheme in place at some point, you know, otherwise you're essentially just sort of selling. Well, you're not selling, you're just giving away points that are just points, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. So they crystallize at funding rounds.
Right, yeah.
That's the only administrative way of doing it. So
yep.
We move along, you gain your points. And then as soon as we do a fundraising round, we let you know, we convert those into cash. And they go automatically back into equity. So then you become a shareholder with a 0 points balance.
Yep.
And then you can start earning points again if you want, or if you're done with Limber, you don't, you're a shareholder. And you have the rights you'd expect as a shareholder.
Yep. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So do you just want to explain then, we've talked a lot about how you got to where you are, why you do what you do. We talked about the equity stuff that comes out the other end. The piece of the jigsaw we're missing is actually the bit in the middle, which is, you know, you've mentioned that it's a tool for entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, freelancers, slashies. I said I'd ask you what a slashie is.
Yeah.
And a lot of the guys that listen to this are marketing consultants. So why is Limber for them? Firstly, what is a slashie? And secondly, why is Limber for these people? Essentially, you know, sell it to me. What is it that why should I be bothered?
Yeah, so slashy to start with. Slashy is just a playful term that we've jumped on. There is a segment of society who have decided that a cool way to live is to do two or three careers effectively in parallel. And it's actually something that's getting more and more prevalent as people have either more and more skills, or obtaining skills is easier, or they find they have to be a bit more sector robust. And by that, I mean if they do a certain job and that job becomes obsolete, then it actually helps them to have more strings to their boat. And that's going to happen more and more as, you know, software languages and technology and the ways of doing things become obsolete as quickly as they become in vogue. So it's kind of this idea of pursuing more than one thing in parallel, earning using all your kind of facets and different skills and personality traits. But, you know, you need not be one. I'm sure there'll be listeners out there who are marketing consultants, but they also do a bit of acting, designing, landscaping on the side. So they may well relate to that as a thing, if not the word itself. So that's what Slashy is. Why should marketing consultants use us? Well, effectively, if you start out on your own, or if you start your side hustle, if it starts out like that, mm-hmm. you may not want to incorporate a company, become VAT registered, get an accountant, do self-assessment, get your QuickBooks account, manage all your money, pay tax at the end of the year, which I know is a nightmare for people because they might have already spent it. I've certainly got friends who are on their own who do that. And there's a lot of hassle associated with that. You have to increase your fees so that they cover pension and holiday and things like that. And what we've done is go, actually, there's a much simpler way of doing that. And there's nothing wrong with the old employment model because you get PAYE and you can go to your bank or your estate agent and you can get rent, you get a mortgage or a loan or a lease if you've got a payslip. Yep. And we just run all your money through PAYE. We arrange your pension, we contribute towards it, and we make sure every invoice you send includes your holiday pay and pension contributions, which your clients will then pay. And every week or month, you receive one neat payment from all your multiple income streams, be it from multiple clients, or be it from multiple sectors, or multiple job roles. And that is all done for you automatically without you having to do any of the boring things and expensive and stressful things I mentioned at the start of that explanation.
So it's essentially like having a finance department all running through an app in your pocket.
Correct. All the scheduling is kind of there for you. You get push notifications when stuff's coming up. It's super simple. You can send contracts with a few taps and get an approval. You can send invoices with a few taps, and we also support you with payments. So another big pain point for consultants is speed of payment. Mm-hmm. So we have every invoice on Limbo is on 7-day payment terms, and we'll help you chase it. And if there's a dispute, we support you with our dispute resolution process, which basically involves us mediating between two parties and providing a neutral recommendation.
There you go. So it's one of the next questions I was going to ask is, so sort of, you know, everything you sort of said you could do through QuickBooks, but actually you've now just gone and answered the question as to why this is different to something like QuickBooks, because it is that you've got that support of all of the, hey look, it's even legally grounded advice because you're a lawyer.
Trust.
That's a bit of a sort of joke about it, but actually you are not only getting the equity stuff back, but you're actually the service level you're getting back is that of a finance department, essentially all sitting behind just you yourself earning a salary. Now it's interesting you mentioned the thing about mortgages, because when I was looking to leave my previous job and set up my own company, one of the things we did sort of within the 8 or 9 months before I left was move house, because we knew that as soon as I set up the company, it was going to be like 3 years accounts. So we either stay put for 3 years or we do it now. So we went and did it now. And then of course, once you've done something like that, of course, possession's 9/10 of the law. So when the mortgage needed renewing 18 months later, whenever it wasn't so much of an issue that I didn't have the 3 years account, but just that all of a sudden my working scenario started to dictate decisions I had to make in my life, because otherwise I was going to lose the opportunity for a while.
Yeah. I mean, I was speaking to Barclays, their head of business products, the other day, and we were both in agreement that the banks have a really bad approach to this stuff. The 3-year accounts thing is ridiculous, and I think it's a kind of hangover from a different world and a different time. And obviously, banks are trying to look after their risk profile, but I think increasingly they're having to accept that that's not a sustainable approach, especially as more and more people do this. So I'm hopeful that we'll meet in the middle somewhere. But certainly, if you were to run everything through Limber, then there would be a payslip for you to rely on and show rather than 3 years of accounts. And that is certainly, you know, something some of our users have used for. I think I spoke to someone the other day, and they were planning on doing kind of top up through Limber. So they put a certain amount through company or self-assessment, but it really helped them to have a steady income stream. So they put kind of 30% of their income through Limber.
That's a clever idea.
Which is cool. We're not going to tell anyone how to use it. Whatever works.
So that all sounds like a really sort of well thought through and considered product that you've got there. So at the moment, it's obviously available through the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store for your mobile device. Is it just for UK accounts, or do you support international payments? Because I know that a number of people will be listening to this right across the globe.
Yeah, so UK only right now, but international coming soon, I think is the short answer to that question. It's really important to us that in a world of fairly questionable business models in a delivery or Uber sense, when things aren't quite done properly and a regulatory crackdown in certain parts of the world, it's important to us that the things that the way people earn on Limber is compliant.
Yeah.
So international just poses a regulatory wrinkle, and that we need to do a little bit of work to spin up in each country. Not loads, but that will take us a little bit of time. So UK only to start with, unless you're abroad for less than 6 months, in which case you're still UK domiciled. So that's fine if you want to go somewhere and work from there, not a problem. But yeah, UK only.
So just and just to clarify that point, that is for you to be based in the UK. So you can have clients that are international clients, but your place of work is here, as you say, unless you're within the 6 months.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect. So look, if I really hope you guys listening to this have got a sort of maybe start to think about things that you don't always think about to do with your own finances. It's not something that we necessarily talk about a lot on the podcast, because we're maybe slightly more sort of driven to the tactical delivery of what you do.
It's boring, Pete.
It is. It can be. It can be. But I think you've done a really good job of keeping it entertaining. Limber.work is the website. Chris, if people want to reach out to you and maybe ask some more questions or get some more information, where can they go?
I would just email me at chris@limber.work.
Fantastic. So I'll
some advice for anyone doing anything. I don't trust any email servers with .work. It was the biggest mistake of our early life. Straight to spam. No matter how stupid your URL, just keep it .com or .co.uk. If you plan on doing any email marketing whatsoever.
There is a point there, I suppose. Although, but it looks so cool.
Yeah, there's a way around it as well. There's a way around it.
So chris@limber.work. I won't put a link to that in the show notes, because I don't want you to get spammed by a bot that finds your email address on my website.
That's
so, you've heard it here, guys. chris@limber.work. Limber.work will be linked in the show notes. And I'll invite Chris into our Facebook group as well, which you can reach at peteverett.com/group. And you can always get a hold of him in there as well. Chris, thank you so much for your time. It's been really great speaking to you. And I'd love to know how Limburg keeps on going and how it grows, and maybe have you back on to talk about V3 when it happens and all of that kind of stuff.
Fantastic. Pete, thanks for having me, and apologies for any construction noise in the background.
No worries. Cheers, mate. See you soon.
Cheers. Take care. Bye-bye.